David McIntosh walks away from residency questions. Should he give better answers? John Gregg's plan to cut gas prices. The Lugar campaign digs deep to find dirt on Richard Murdoch. And the governor closes the door on a run for vice president. That plus the governor's Sachem Award and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 27, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, congressional candidate David McIntosh is trying to avoid questions about his residency while opponents attack him in direct mail pieces. The 5th District Republican called a State House news conference to talk about Planned Parenthood funding while accusing his opponents of avoiding the real issues. Meantime, fraud investigator Greg Wright and his attorney called for a special prosecutor to look into their allegations that McIntosh committed voter fraud in the last two elections. I asked McIntosh about related issues, including whether his children go to school in Virginia.
My kids are not the issue in this campaign.
Do you pay taxes in Virginia?
I pay taxes in Indiana, and I pay taxes in Virginia.
You work in Washington, D.C.?
Right now, I'm working in Indiana.
Running for Congress?
Running for Congress and serving on boards here in Indiana that keep me busy.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm going to go.
Does McIntosh need to answer those questions? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, can McIntosh make this go away?
Well, I guess that remains to be seen here. I mean, he obviously doesn't live in Indiana and hasn't for years. That would not necessarily stop him from being elected. I mean, he took a page out of Dan Coates' book. He lost an election here, shook the dust of Indiana from his feet, moved out to Washington, went through that revolving door, and became a high-paid lobbyist for years. He bought a house out there, an expensive house, another expensive house in Florida, didn't darken Indiana's door, and now he wants to represent it. And, you know, is that a problem for him politically? Absolutely. But in addition to that, he has a legal problem we've talked about before. Right. He signed dueling affidavits asserting residency under penalties of perjury in Virginia and Indiana. That's a legal problem.
Concerning his voting in 2008 and 2010. But do you find the answers to my questions to be interesting?
Yes. I mean, you know, there's only 10 days left in the campaign, so that to answer your first question, this is not going to go away in 10 days, clearly. And by now, you would think he would have a better answer than he gave. He clearly looked irritated and uncomfortable that you were in his face asking him these questions.
But you can understand that. And,
well, granted, I'll give you that one.
But he did walk away from the interview.
Well, but, you know, and the problem is that his opponents, at least two of them now, are not only hounding him, but pounding him on this question. You know, Susan Brooks is talking about it. John McGough has a mailer out that asked the question, do you have to have a lawyer tell you where you live? And that's pretty effective stuff, because that stuff's targeted right to people who are likely to vote in the primary. So they're doing exactly what we've been talking about here for a few weeks. Unless people put some money behind this question, it's not going to have much traction. But it doesn't take much when you have this many people in a race to make that a problem for him.
But what it tells you is that David McIntosh is in the lead right now.
Sure.
When you got two others attacking it.
I suppose you can go into the political equivalent of a four corners offense and hope that you can outlast the questions and make it to across the finish line, to mix sports metaphors. go from basketball to track by May 8th. The question is, can he do it? And I think, Jim, David McIntosh is an experienced politician. He's a former member of Congress. He should know, anybody with his experience should know, that if you want to stop having to answer questions like that, you don't turn and walk off while you're on camera. That way, it seems to me that that just invites not only your questions as follow-up questions, but anyone else who's covering that campaign. You don't turn from an issue like that. You really need to address it and talk until you're blue in the face and until those questions are answered, it seems to me, if you really want them to go away.
Yeah, unless you don't have an answer.
Well, clearly he didn't have an answer that made a lot of sense. He didn't handle that interview very well at all. And he may well be perceived as the front runner right now, and I haven't seen any polling. I have no idea what the polling would show. But if you just look at the makeup of the four leaders in this, you've got Susan Brooks and John McGough, who, you know, people are saying they might divide the vote in Hamilton County and Northern Marion County to their detriment. But also, if you look at Wayne Siebold has run a very effective campaign, in my opinion, and he's done very well in the more conservative parts of this district. And the idea was that McIntosh was more conservative than anyone else and would end up winning it because you split the vote in the more moderate southern part of the district. I'm not sure that's the case. I think that McIntosh has a real chance to finish below second place. Well,
Wayne Siebold is taking an interesting approach here. He was out rollerblading through Broad Ripple yesterday and got some great positive media coverage. He's not doing any of the negative stuff that the other folks are doing. Can he skate through?
Oh, nicely done.
Well, that was very well done, in fact. I thought he got a good hit on the rollerblading through the Broad Ripple. But even he made a reference that I thought was pretty entertaining, which was to Tonya Harding,
right,
taking wax at the opponents. so even he jumped a little bit, but I thought Siebold is really doing a good job right now doing the rollerblading thing.
What this shows is, I mean, John pointed out about the notion of being the most conservative. I think issues really have fallen aside in this campaign, if they ever mattered at all. Basically.
Well, but if he asks, they're all just saying I'm more conservative than the next.
They're all saying they hate Barack Obama.
But if you get right down to it, they're all pretty much in lockstep politically. So what you're saying, well, John McGough, for instance, is saying, you know, I guess we are all pretty much the same. So what he's trying to do, to Mike's point, is set himself apart through something that's a little more creative. Wayne Siebold is doing the same thing with something that's a little bit more creative.
I think McIntosh's problem is something that everybody can easily understand on top of the Lugar residency issues. And I think what it is he in touch with the voters? We've talked before, you don't have to live here to represent it. But if you're not here, if you become a high-powered lobbyist, you move out of Indiana, you don't have anything to do with us anymore, and then you come back and say, I'm going to run because there's an open seat here, so here I am, folks. Maybe they don't line up. We'll see.
John Gregg revealed his plan for lifting the sales tax on gasoline this week. The Democratic candidate for governor says his plan would save the average family up to $522 a year. Gregg proposes eliminating the current 7% sales tax on gasoline on a permanent basis. It would mean a loss of $540 million a year to state government. Back in 2000, then-Governor Frank O'Bannon, also a Democrat, suspended the gas tax for 3 months.
This is the quickest way we can directly impact Hoosiers' lives. Gas isn't a luxury. You know, we don't tax food, we don't tax medicine, there's all kinds of things we exclude from sales tax in Indiana. It's time we now include in that gasoline.
Mike McDaniel, how could Republicans vote against that?
First of all, it's never going to get a hearing, probably, because this particular proposal by John Gregg makes him a lead pipe sense to be a first-round inductee into the Political Pandering Hall of Fame. When you talk about eliminating this tax, and it's over $500 million of income to the state of Indiana, and when you're asked how you're going to pay for it, you're going to pay for it by an audit that you're going to do every year. You're going to find $500 million every year.
The Daniels administration
actually $750 million.
And a one-time deal. You're talking about every year he's talking about finding $500 million. At a time when government's been cut to the bone, we've talked about that on here over and over and again.
Right.
And at a time, I talked to Luke Kinley about this week, chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate. He was just stunned by this proposal because he said, you know, at the very time we're trying to find money to give to K-12 education and higher education, you'd eliminate $500 million from this every year. You have no chance to do any of that. And besides that, this is a tax that's paid for by out-of-state truckers, people that pass through Indiana. So you're going to take away all that revenue? I mean, John Gregg knew when he made this proposal that this was way out of line. He had no way to pay for it. And subsequently, that's what makes it pander.
You know what? What's great about this is Republicans are all for cutting taxes, except when the majority of people benefit from it.
No,
there are two taxes.
You can't pay for it.
There are two taxes. Let me finish. Two taxes that everybody pays. Gas sales tax,
right.
and income tax. They voted against a cut in income tax for lower wage people, okay? But they're all in favor of cutting the inheritance tax. They're all in favor of cutting the corporate income, adjusted gross income tax. By the way, those two numbers alone come up to $400 million. They don't want the millionaires to pay 30% of their taxes. They don't want any inheritance tax on the federal level. So the point of it is, they're for tax cuts if millionaires and better benefit from it. Because right now, with the exclusions, you'd have to have $1 million to leave to your kids before you'd pay any inheritance tax.
Well, tell me, how big is
four kids?
How attractive is the benefit here? It's going to save, if $50 on a fill-up, you save $3.50, right?
Well, I think they estimated it was somewhere between $250 and maybe $500 a year for somebody who buys a lot of gas. That's a significant amount of money for a person in the state of Indiana. I'm not going to say it's not, but for what they have to try to do to get to that point is very difficult. We talked about the money that they found. Well, you have to remember that if you net that out, because, that money, the $200 million was money that was owed, they just didn't distribute it. So it's $114 million net. I just think it's very hard to find a way to make up that lost revenue, and in that way you have a problem.
What about if you reinstate the inheritance tax and the
But he didn't recommend that, Ann.
He didn't do that.
But you can. But that's the Republican approach.
Okay, so if this is pandering, we've seen pandering work. I mean, unless it's over the top. Is this recognized by the average voter?
I think if you want to get right down to it, probably. And now I'm going to get nominated, I think, to the Senate Hall of Fame, perhaps. But what I'm going to say here is it probably does work, because if the issue worsens and gas prices spike, as the experts say, then he can be out front of the issue and say, where's my opponent on this issue? I'm the only one who has said we should do something about it, even if it's irresponsible. I'm not saying it's good policy, because you're right. He has no way to explain, other than we're going to be more efficient, we're going to cut here, we're going to cut there, about how to pay for it. So maybe shame on him for pandering and not having details to back it up. But it goes both ways. As long as I'm being cynical and criticizing him, I'll criticize Mike Pence and others who have had proposals over the past year about estate taxes and about cutting corporate income taxes.
And hasn't put them out there yet because he hasn't said he's going to pay for it.
He said he talked about them, but said
but
he didn't know how to pay for
them. He hasn't said yet.
So, I mean,
he's not saying anything.
There's some guilt on both sides here. There's guilt on both sides.
All right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is it a good idea to lift the sales tax on gasoline? Your choices are A, yes, gas is a necessity. B, no, the state can't afford it. Or C, we need to redo the entire tax system. Last week's question was, can you tell the difference between an ad from a candidate and an ad from a super PAC? 48% said yes. 31% said no, 21% said I ignore them all. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The campaign of Senator Richard Lugar this week used a 20-year-old candidate questionnaire to raise questions about his GOP primary opponent, Richard Murdoch. The Lugar campaign used a retired former newsman, Larry McIntyre, to make its case. McIntyre is a Lugar volunteer.
I will do anything I can to help Dick Lugar.
And so, along with a series of charges already leveled against Murdoch, McIntyre pointed out that in 1992, Richard Murdoch supported the Fairness Doctrine, a one-time federal requirement on broadcasters to provide equal time to opposing parties.
A position that would wipe out conservative talk radio and infringe on our freedom of speech.
That, the Lugar campaign believes, should lead to this conclusion.
Conservative voters cannot trust Richard Murdoch.
Murdoch, meantime, has changed his position in the time since 1992.
Richard opposes the Fairness Doctrine because he feels like it is a violation of free speech.
And the Murdoch campaign draws this conclusion.
I think it's really just a desperate attempt of a campaign that's running on fumes, and it's pathetic.
Murdoch campaign spokesman Chris Connor there. John Kitzenberger, which campaign looks the worst in that series of events?
Oh, they've covered themselves in glory the entire this whole time, and I think they're just they both look bad. They've all looked bad. But, you know, the Lugar campaign is guilty of really overselling this thing. I mean, before the news conference, this is a definitive turn of events, and it's going to prove once and for all that Richard Murdoch is not who he says he is. And then you realize that 20 years ago, he took a position that might have been opposite to what most conservatives think they should take. I just think it was a terrible case of overselling. It's indicative of the lows that both campaigns have reached, and it's really disgusting.
If you're looking for a rotten fruit or whatever to throw at the each other's campaign, the cupboards are pretty bare right now. I mean, we're down to, it seems like, some pretty slim pickings here. And we're going to have Pat Boone, I guess, now on the air here with in a rotation that Dick Lugar is going to be endorsed by noted conservative singer, I guess. Is he a singer?
Tell the voters who they are.
And, I mean, thing to Elvis.
Well, which is probably not effective in all seriousness as the governor. I mean, if I were Dick Lugar, I would just run the governor spot 24/7.
He's got two Mitch Daniels spots, actually, now walking on the Lugar farm so that...
Oh, he has property here.
Very powerful spots, too, by the way.
Is this challenging Richard Murdoch on a 20-year-old candidate questionnaire? Is that beneath Richard Lugar?
What I love about this is that they've been pounding Dick Lugar now for weeks about a record that spans 30-plus years. And when the Lugar campaign goes back 20, it's like, boy, this is a reach.
No, I think the other stuff is bad, too.
Has said that. You did say that.
If you're suggesting anybody on this show is not. Yeah. I think they both are clearly, cleaning out their cupboards.
You can make that argument, but what I would say is don't criticize them for going back 20. When people are cherry-picking votes that go back 30
years. Well, I'm not saying he's doing anything.
It's ridiculous.
Tell me this. Do you get the sense that they just did their opposition research?
I get the sense that whenever they did the opposition research, they're desperate. I mean, this is when you start out a campaign saying that the attacks based on the residency are, he didn't say greasy kid stuff. He said, what was the term they
used? Low-rent politics.
Well, low-rent politics. It was Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse politics, okay? What is this? I mean, is this really an issue in this campaign? We've had the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine since the Clinton administration, for goodness sake. It's not a current term. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Richard Lugar change his position on immigration from 20 or 25 years ago? And that was okay. But, you know, it's more a sense of desperation. And it really makes you think that for those people who are independents and Democrats who voted for him, this is no longer the Richard Lugar that they supported in the past. And his positions on a number of issues have gone. He tried to outflank him on the right. There's no room over there.
That's what he's trying to do.
There's no room.
Governor Mitch Daniels kept the door open to a run for vice president after he said no to a run for president not quite a year ago. But it's clear he now wants the speculation to end. Daniels appeared on a national cable TV channel where he said that he wants to keep his commitment to Indiana voters to serve a full 8 years, a comment that came less than a week after he belatedly endorsed Mitt Romney. The next day, the governor wanted to make it clear that there is no wiggle room in his position.
I don't want to do it. I don't expect it to happen. Don't look for it. And I'm not really trying to express any great nuance or difference, Jim. It's just that I decided that national office was not something that I was interested in doing.
John Schwanes, can Daniels still expect to play a significant role in the Republican National Convention in Tampa?
Oh, I think he'll certainly get attention. From two areas, his own party, but also the media, national media. He's a known commodity. They respect him. National correspondents based in New York and D.C. They know he's a thoughtful strategist and politician, and they're going to go to him. And so I think he'll be showing up on a lot of newscasts and in a lot of stories. Also, if the campaign comes down to some of these, if the Mitt Romney campaign tries to tack back toward the center, as is every indication,
that's just
and move away, away from social issues and try to preach the virtues of let's dealing with the economy and only the economy, well, guess who's been saying that famously or infamously, depending on your view, for years? And that's the whole moratorium approach that on social issues that Mitch Daniels espoused years ago.
Okay, but does this change the fact now that he's ruled out any national office? Does it change his national status?
It could. I think it could. You know, when you're a contender, you're naturally going to come up first in most people's minds when they're talking about whether they should book him for an interview, that kind of thing. But I really do think that he'll still be there. And I do think that if the Republicans want to have any chance at gaining any kind of that middle ground vote, they're going to need at least to listen to him as an advisor, whether or not he's out front.
And he's been offering some advice. He's been critical of the Romney strategy.
Yeah. I mean, between being critical of the Romney strategy and being one of the last to endorse him, you know, and being from a state which Mike says is already in Romney's column, there was no chance that he was going to be the vice president. So he's smart to do this. He's smart to take himself out of the running, and he would still have a role because they have to tack to center, because there's no room on that right flank anymore. And the war against women, he's going to have to try to change that, and I don't think he's going to be able to.
Does Mitt Romney look to him for advice?
Sure he will. I mean, how does he not? He will be in demand at the convention. I totally expect him to play a major role there, probably give a major address one of the nights. If they don't, they're making a serious mistake. Now, whether he'll be there for much more than that, knowing him, probably flying for the day, do the speech, get out of Dodge, because that's not his kind of thing to go do. But this tells me that the family hasn't changed their mind about playing a national role. This tells me that they were against that idea also, even though the campaign was
He told Fox News he didn't even have the conversation.
Well, you know, I'm sure they may not have had the official conversation, because you don't have that until you're asked where you think you're going to be asked. But, you know, he was smart to do what he did, and he will play a major role at the convention.
A GOP fundraising dinner prompted a protest this week. It came from Planned Parenthood supporters. Part of their protest was aimed at the keynote speaker, Bob McDonnell, the governor of Virginia. They didn't like the bill he signed into law that requires a woman to get an ultrasound before having an abortion. Meantime, pro-life forces complained that the governor's stance on abortion has become more moderate.
Now, what I've done is I've supported bills like the Hyde Amendment that we've enacted in Virginia that does have some exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. That's my public policy position that I've helped to embrace with certain legislation. My personal reviews are that we should support life at every turn.
And Eleni McDonnell also says this is all a distraction to avoid the jobs issue, is it?
This has been the Republican agenda. This has been the Republican agenda from start to finish. Whether it's, by the way, Richard Lugar's vote cast against the Violence Against Women Act yesterday, or whether it's not allowing birth control, or whether it's the invasive procedure McDonnell okayed, it's been a complete war against women, and they have waged it. And they have waged it proudly, and they're not going to be able to back away from it. There's going to be a demonstration here Saturday, and there's going to be a demonstration in every state capital. Because they can try to use, as you say, the Etch-a-Sketch to erase their positions on this, but their positions on this are clear, and the women are going to vote in November, and they're going to lose.
McDonnell was here for the state dinner because he's a potential candidate for vice president, because he's a leader on this issue, or just why?
All of the above. Chairman of the Republican Governors Association, which I'm sure will play a major role in this gubernatorial campaign before it's over. It was my first time to hear the governor, and he gave a great speech. There were about six people that I saw outside protesting, and 800 people inside who heard a great speech.
White guys in suits.
No, not white guys in suits.
The report I got was there were nine or ten.
And the idea, well, maybe nine. But 800 inside who heard a great
50%
speech.
50% more than you suggested.
Well,
50%
exactly,
more.
That's exactly right. And we're concentrated on the nine people who are outside, which is a
still for
a joke.
You know, for a fundraising dinner, it's
he was absolutely excellent.
He'd be a great choice for vice president.
The idea that you carry the message for all women in this country is a joke.
Okay.
Because all women don't feel the way you do.
About birth control?
All women don't feel the way you do.
We're going to move on.
They're in favor of violence against women, and they're in favor of...
Nobody said anything about violence against women but you.
Governor Mitch Daniels presented the 2012 SACHM Award this week.
He voted against
the SACHM Award goes to Ian Rowland of Fort Wayne. He's the former chairman and CEO of Lincoln National Corporation. The SACHM Award is the state's highest honor. It is given annually to recognize a lifetime of excellence and moral virtue. that has brought credit and honor to Indiana. Mike McDaniel, Governor Daniels created this award. Will the next governor continue it?
I think so. This is something for the highest of the highest honors. And Ian Rowland is certainly an ideal recipient of this. He's been great for Indiana for a lot of years.
But this replaced the Sagamore or the Wabash.
No, it didn't replace it.
As the top award, the Sagamore is still there. Right. This was inserted above it. The Sagamore was used as a political tool by previous governors. Yeah. Hasn't been used so much by Mitch Daniels. Does it make sense for another governor to change?
Yes, it makes sense.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.